From NPR, this is Science Friday. I'm Joe Palca. Over 600 people died of cholera in London during the outbreak of 1854, and it was a pretty mysterious disease back then. The prevailing medical theory of the day blamed it on contaminated vapors. But the English physician John Snow had his own theory. To prove it, he mapped out the cholera deaths during the outbreak, and he noticed that many of the deaths were concentrated around one particular water pump on Broad Street. Snow recommended disabling the pump, and sure enough, the outbreak was contained, so they knew it had something to do with water. 30 years after that, a German physician discovered the real culprit behind cholera outbreaks, a bacterium. Now, you'd think that 150 years later, we'd have pretty much solved all the problems and mysteries surrounding cholera. Well, not. There are still a lot of things that scientists are mystified by, like where cholera lives when it's not infecting humans and why it flares up sometimes and not at others. Not to mention the latest outbreak, how did it get to Haiti and why now? My next guest has been helping patients down in Haiti trying to keep the outbreak under control. Let me introduce him now. Eric Mintz is a medical epidemiologist in the Division of Foodborne, Waterborne, and Environmental Diseases at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta. He joins us by phone from Haiti today. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Mintz.
Thank you, Joe. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
And if you'd like to join us and ask questions, the number is 800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. And very interested to, of course, this is a very pressing problem. Can you just give us a sense of how things are going there now?
Yes, I can. So the outbreak is still ongoing. The last figures I have are from October 27th, and a total of 4,722 cholera cases have been reported to the Ministry of Health here in Haiti at that time, and 303 deaths due to cholera had been reported.
Mm-hmm.
We're working. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask you, how did it happen? Why is it happening now?
Well, that is a great question, and it's one of the questions that, as you said, we scientists don't have an answer for. The Vibrio cholera bacteria that causes cholera is a free-living organism. It can survive in the natural environment. Its preferred home is brackish water, but it can survive in seawater or in freshwater, in rivers. It infects humans from time to time in explosive outbreaks or epidemics, and then lies relatively quiescent at other times. And we don't fully understand the ecology and the environmental factors that determine what the triggers are for those outbreaks or epidemics.
Well, if you're not sure where it's coming from, do you have any idea why it gets transmitted so rapidly through a group?
Well, that much we do understand, thanks to the efforts of Dr. John Snow in the 1800s that you mentioned. Because cholera is a water-loving organism, most epidemics, most outbreaks are predominantly transmitted through water, and that water can be contaminated originally from and the environmental source of cholera in the surface water, a body of water like a river. But as humans, as people become infected and become ill, and cholera causes a very profuse, watery, diarrheal illness in some people, if the drinking water is not well protected, as was the case in London in 1854, then that water really becomes super contaminated, if you will, with loads of Vibrios, and people who consume it are at high risk for getting ill themselves.
So if you get if you drink some water that has a few of these bacterium in it, are you going to get sick, or might you get sick, or are some people never going to get sick?
I guess you could say all of the above. Many people will be exposed to the Vibrio cholera bacteria and won't develop any symptoms of illness, no diarrhea at all. In fact, about three-quarters of people under an epidemic circumstance. And the other fourth, about 25%, will have diarrheal illness. Most of them, about two-thirds, will have a mild diarrheal illness. And a portion, maybe a fifth or so, will have a moderate diarrheal illness. They may go to a doctor, they can feel pretty bad. And then a small percentage, about 2% of the total of all those who are exposed, will develop cholera gravis, the most severe form of cholera. And that is a extremely profuse, watery diarrhea up to a liter or more an hour, accompanied by vomiting, and very rapidly can progress to dehydration and shock, and without proper treatment will lead to death.
And is there any indication why some go to the fulminating side and some just have the mild side?
Mm-hmm. There are several indications. One determinant is the dose of bacteria that you ingest. So the more you're exposed to those bacteria, the greater the risk that you'll develop more severe symptoms. But other factors influence that. For example, the stomach is an acid barrier to bacteria. Vibrio cholerae in particular are very sensitive to acidity. People who have a low gastric acidity, perhaps because they're taking antacids, or young children, are therefore going to have more of the Vibrio get through their stomach and into the intestinal tract. And that's where the cholera toxin does its damage and causes the diarrheal illness. We've also noted in several studies that this can be influenced by blood group, and that people with blood group O, all other things being equal, are more likely to develop the severe form of cholera than people with other blood groups, A, B, or AB. Mm-hmm. And the reasons for that are not well understood.
Yeah. So what's the treatment? Is there a treatment?
Thankfully, there is. There is a very simple treatment, and that consists of replacing the fluid and the electrolytes, the sodium, potassium, the chloride, and the bicarbonate, that are lost through the diarrheal stool and or through vomiting. If you can keep up with the losses by replacing that fluid volume and those electrolytes, the body can maintain its homeostasis, and the patient, in all likelihood, will survive. What happens is when people do not have that fluid and those electrolytes replaced, they quickly become dehydrated, they'll become shocky and die. And the way to replace them is through a magic powder, oral rehydration salts. That's a mixture of the electrolytes I mentioned, plus glucose, sugar. And when that's mixed, one packet with 1 liter of water, it contains exactly the right constituents to replace what's lost in the diarrheal stool and in the vomitus. And so most people can be treated with simply oral rehydration. For those that come in severely dehydrated or are not able to drink sufficient amounts of oral rehydration solution, intravenous rehydration is used.
Okay. Well, let's take a call now and go to Don in Cincinnati, Ohio. Don, welcome to Science Friday. You're on the air.
Thank you. Has cholera been eradicated in the U.S., and if so, when?
Interesting question. What about
Thanks.
That?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess we can say that epidemic cholera has been eradicated in the United States long ago. The last time we've had epidemic cholera was in the 19th century. And at around the turn of the century, as we were coming into the early 1900s, a lot was invested in water treatment plants and water distribution systems in our cities, waste collection systems and waste treatment systems, and a lot of attention was paid to hand washing and hygiene at that time. That was the sanitary revolution that occurred in Europe and the United States. And since then, we have never seen anything like the outbreak occurring here in Haiti with thousands of cases. We do have in the United States occasional sporadic cases, several a year. Many of those are in people who have traveled abroad to countries where cholera is endemic and have, you know, drunk the water or eaten some food that was contaminated and develop illness on return to the United States. But we don't see secondary transmission within the United States. They don't infect others. And there's also some Vibrio cholera off our own shores. in the Gulf Coast. And we occasionally get a case of cholera in somebody who's eaten an oyster or some crustacean, shellfish from the Gulf of Mexico, and they failed to properly cook it. And, of course, cooking will kill cholera or other bacteria.
Okay. Let's next go to Beth in Southfield, Michigan. Beth, welcome to Science Friday. You're on the air.
Thank you. Hi. I had a grandmother who grew up in Poland and told a story of a cholera outbreak in her small village. And she believed that after going to the funerals of the first several victims, or numerous victims, the rest of the village, nearly all of her village, was wiped out. And she believed that they contracted it from being at the cemetery and breathing the air over the other bodies that had been buried. And I'm wondering if that's a possible way of contracting cholera.
Interesting. Dr. Mintz, what about that?
Well, that's a fascinating story, and that is indeed, that was the theory before John Snow's work in London. But every investigation we've done since has indicated that cholera is not transmitted by air. There's no risk to acquiring cholera by breathing the air. However, your point is very well taken. There have been outbreaks, well-described outbreaks, that follow the funerals of cholera victims. And when investigated, those turn out to be, you know, either everybody was exposed before the funeral through the drinking water, and the unlucky first victim, is just the index case, if you will, the first case. But in some instances, people prepare food and handle the corpse, and there can be contamination of that food, the meal served at the funeral, if people are not very careful with the burial. So
yes.
those are precautions to be aware of.
Okay, Beth, thank you for that.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we're talking with Dr. Eric Mintz from the CDC, who's in Haiti at the moment, dealing with or helping to deal with the outbreak of cholera there, and we're taking your calls. I'm Joe Palca, and this is Science Friday from NPR. And let's take another call now and go to Aaron in, did I say that right? Aaron in Jacksonville, Florida. Welcome to Science Friday.
That's right. I just wanted to know, the boiling water, would it prevent a spread of cholera? That would be the first case everywhere.
Boiling water. Okay. What about that, Dr. Mintz?
Well, boiling water is a very effective way to disinfect the water. It will not only kill Vibrio cholera, the bacteria that causes cholera, but it's a great way to make sure your water is free of any pathogen, any living organism that could cause infection or illness. It's not always possible to boil water here in Haiti. Unfortunately, there's a lot of deforestation, and fuel is hard to come by, expensive, and it's just impractical to boil all the drinking water for a poor family here. Another way to ensure that the water is safer to drink and free from Vibrio cholera bacteria is to treat it with chlorine, the way our water systems in the U.S. and in other countries are chlorinated. But if you're getting your water from a lake or a river, there's no chlorine in that surface water source, and there is a way, though, to chlorinate it in the home, to add a few drops of bleach or a tablet form of chlorine, and to eliminate the Vibrio cholera bacteria from the water by chemical disinfection.
And is that the key to controlling this epidemic, to making sure that the water supply is cleared of the bacterium?
I think that's a critical part of the key to controlling this epidemic, both in the cities where chlorine levels in municipal water systems can be brought up higher to make sure that they stay safe and free of cholera bacteria, but in rural areas where people aren't served by water systems, then this household water treatment is going to be a key component to protecting themselves and protecting their families from becoming infected.
Okay, let's go for one more call and go to Dominic in St. Louis, Missouri. Dominic, welcome to Science Friday.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well.
I'm Haitian,
And there's a rumor in the Haitian community that the source of the cholera was from UN soldiers, Napoli's UN soldiers, that were emptying their latrines in upriver from where it happened. Is that true?
Well, I've heard that rumor. It is circulating here in Haiti, and we have no evidence at all to support it. It is certainly possible that cholera could have been introduced by a traveler from anywhere in the world who may have had illness or may have been an asymptomatically infected person, someone with cholera but who had no symptoms, no diarrheal illness. It's also possible that it could have come here through the environment, through water in the Caribbean Sea, or perhaps through a river water that may have had a small reservoir of Vibrios, and for environmental reasons we don't understand, that bloomed, someone became ill, and started the cycle of increasing water contamination. We really don't know the origin, and it's something we're interested in, but it's not going to be an easy question for us to find the answer to.
So are things getting under control, or is this still a situation that's out of control?
Well, they are stabilizing, and by that I'm referring to the fact that the case fatality rate, the proportion of all of the people who are ill, that is dying, that's decreasing. In the beginning of a cholera epidemic, particularly in a country like Haiti where they have no recent experience with cholera before, people may not realize how serious it is, how severe it can be, and they may delay going to seek help for diarrhea.
Yeah.
And the healthcare providers may not realize the severity, and they may not treat it as aggressively as is needed to save the life of somebody with cholera.
Okay, Dr. Mintz, I'm afraid I'm going to have to cut you off there because that's all the time we have. Dr. Eric Mintz is a medical epidemiologist in the Division of Foodborne, Waterborne, and Environmental Diseases at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you very much, Joe.
Bye-bye. This show is music is composed by Greg Smith. We had help today from NPR librarian Key Molesky. If you missed any part of this program or others, go to our website at sciencefriday.com and download our podcasts, audio and video. You can also take us along on your iPhone. Download the iPhone app for instant access to Science Friday. For conversations all week, follow us on Twitter. Our Twitter name is @SciFry, or you can email us, scifry@npr.org. For NPR in New York, I'm Joe Palca.